Lepo pozdravljeni nazaj, še vedno poslušate Radio Študent in oddajo Stripofilija, v kateri se seveda posvečamo vsem striparskim in stripoljubskim in stripodogodkovnim zadevam, ki se dogajajo po Sloveniji in svetu. Danes smo vam obljubili intervju z Iztokom Sitarjem, ki je stripar, tudi karikaturist in slovenski ilustrator, sicer ga pa morda poznate tudi kot stripovskega teoretika, kajti napisal je eno pomembnejših teoretskih striparskih knjig za slovenski prostor, zgodovino slovenskega stripa 1927 do 2007. Je pa izdal tudi več kot 15 stripovskih albumov, ilustriral je več kot 100 učbenikov, glavnom ni da ni. V časopisu Dnevnik je več kot 10 let objavljal serijo Bučmanovi. V preteklem letu, torej leta 2013, pa je v Novem Sadu prejel tudi nagrado za najboljšo ilustracijo proznega dela. No, njegov prvi album, ki ga je izdal pri 28 letih, se je imenoval Sperma in kri in je izšel leta 1990. Midva pa sva se pogovarjala o njegovem trenutno zadnjem albumu Čudaki ljubijo drugače, samo za vas na Radio Študent. Torej, Iztok, lepo pozdravljen.
Živo.
Danes sva tukaj zato, da bova spregovorila kakšno besedo ali dve, torej o pravkar izdanem stripu Čudaki ljubijo drugače. Nekaj teh stripov smo že videli v mladini, nekaj teh stripov verjetno izhaja tudi iz neke bolj autobiografske podobe. Kako da si se v bistvu lotil sploh teh stripov, če se sploh še spomneš od tok let nazaj?
Ja, stripi so že kar nekaj let nazaj začeli izhajati v mladini. Začel sem prisati take pač, recimo, to izhaja iz tega iz družbeno angažiranih stripov, ki sem jih že prej risal za mladino. Recimo Črni možje, bele kosti, kjer sem govoril o katoliški cerkvi, ali pa 4000, kjer sem govoril o slovenski, predvsem desničarski politiki. S tem stripom Čudaki ljubijo drugače sem pa hotel postaviti ogledalo pred celotno slovensko družbo, predvsem kar se tiče ljubezenskih zadev.
Na kakšen način pa si potem to storil? Nekateri celo trdijo, da se Slovenci tako zelo malo pogovarjamo o spolnosti, da pravzaprav nimamo niti nobene prave besede v slovarju za to.
Ja, mislim, no, da besed je dosti, niso pa ravno za javno uporabo. Kar se pa tiče tega, sem pa si izbral 10 zgodb za ta album, to se pravi bolj nekonvencionalnih ljubezenskih zgodb. To se pravi neravno vsakdanjih. In tako noter nastopajo recimo homoseksualci, kar je pri nas še vedno več ali manj tabu tema, posebej recimo v Polanski dolini, kjer jaz živim, ali pa na splošno v ruralnih okoljih. Potem sem vzel recimo tudi take stvari, kot so alkoholizm notor.
Poljanska dolina, nekaj smo že rekli o tem, sam izhajaš iz Poljanske doline, pa vendar opisuješ, kot da je to eden najbolj zaprtih in konzervativnih krajev na zemlji. Kako da v bistvu pravzaprav potem še vedno ostaješ tam?
No, tudi Ivan Tavčar je bil iz Poljanske doline, ki je, če bi bil še zdaj živ, bi bil moj sosed, ker so je mahišo lih par 10 metrov naprej od moje, pa je bil on tudi zelo velik liberalc. To se pravi tudi iz takih okolij, ki so zelo konzervativna, pridejo ven, mislim, da zelo liberalni ljudje.
Kot si tudi ti sam. Kot smo že omenila prej, lotivaš se vse od incesta, domačega pretepanja in vsega podobnega. In vendar le govoriš o tem, kot da je to nekaj povsem vsakdanjega, ni nobenih prevelikih čustvenih upletanj. Kako da si se...
Ja, to so recimo v bistvu zelo normalne stvari. Če pogledamo eno zgodbo, ki se dogaja prav tukaj v Poljanah, to je ta ženska, ki je padla po stopnicah, pa to nisem recimo polanska tema, ampak nasplošno slovenska, še vedno je zelo velik tabu pretepene ženske. In glede tega še vedno velja velika stigma in tišina okoli tega in jaz sem se pač v enem stripu tudi odločil spregovoriti o tem. Bom videl, če bo to imel kaj učinka. No, kad je rekel že, da nimo Fran Levstik, da je treba pisati knjige tako, da se bo vsak Slovenc videl v njej kot v ogledalu. Jaz recimo na ta način rišem stripe, tako da se pač vsak Slovenc vidi v mojih stripih.
Ampak vendarle se vsak Slovenec ne more videti v tvojih stripih, vsaj na mladini, ne, glede na to, da so ti tri stripe cenzurirali. V redu, potem pa bi te rada še vprašala, kako to, da si se lotil tako zelo eksplicitne knjige? A mogoče res zaradi tega, ker se seks prodaja danes, ali zaradi tega, ker mogoče preko tega lažje upozoriš na neke določene druge težave, pomankljivosti, ki nas vendarle vse se dotikajo?
V bistvu ta knjiga sploh ni imela biti namen erotična ali ljubezenska, mislim, ali pa celo sploh pornografska, ampak je to predvsem družbeno kritična knjiga. V bistvu so to socialni stripi. En tak strip imamo noter, da nimo, kako ena punca iz ruralnega okolja pride v Ljubljano študirati in zaradi pomankanja denarja potem postane prostitutka. To so pač take zgodbe, so jih pa nekateri mediji pa označili za dejansko pornografske, ne, kar meni sploh ni jasen. In še meni mi je pa logično, da nekatere knjižnice recimo nočejo vzeti teh knjig v svojo zbirko.
Torej, pravzaprav točno to, na kar si opozarjal, se ti je potem zgodilo.
Ja, točno to.
No, pa če za trenutek še pogledava, držiš se tega svojega stila risanja, torej s čopičem. Si kdaj pomislil o katerem drugem stilu oziroma o delanju z računalnikom? Ali je računalnik v kakšnem delu del tvojega ustvarjanja?
To, jaz sem, kar se računalnika tiče, sem zelo velik dinozaver. Jaz lih to, da sem se navadil skenirati, pa pol očistiti, sliko pa poslati po mailu, ne, drugač pa z računalnikom nimam lih kakšnih takih posebnih dobrih izkušenj. Res je, da sem poskusil sem tudi barvati na računalnik, ampak nisem bil preveč zadovoljen z rezultatom, pa še veliko počasneje mi je šlo kot na roko. Je pa to, da sem od začetka sem risal moj prvi strip, to je bil, ki sem ga izdal leta 1990, Sperma in krip, sem narisal s peresom. Kasneje, vse kasnejše stripe sem pa potem s čopičem. Pred kakimi desetimi leti sem začel tudi risati z barvami, to pa zaradi tega, ker časopisi niso več hoteli objavljati črno-belih stripov, ampak so hoteli absolutno samo barvne. No in potem sem se jaz tudi mogel vršiti na barve, poskusil sem s tempero, pa s plomastri, pa mi tudi učinek ni bil najboljši, no potem sem pa odkril akvarel in to je bila ljubezen na prvi pogled. Zdaj vse rišem z akvarelom, pa mislim, da mi tudi dobro uspeva.
Kaj pa je tisto, kar te najbolj privlači na akvarelu? Zakaj je tako drugačno od ostalih medijev, tehnik?
Ja, predvsem lepe barve, dajo se fajn mešati barve in zelo enostavno je za uporabo.
Sicer pa zdaj bliža se poletje, vemo, da poletje ponavadi malo zamrejo določeni dogodki, ali lahko pričakujemo, da boš čudake predstavljal še kdaj v teh dveh prihodnih mesecih? Stripofilija namreč odhaja poleti na počitnice, pa morda, če bi nam sam zaupal, kdaj se bojo kakšne od teh dogodkov odvijali, če imaš kako predstavitev mogoče?
Ja, septembra bo predstavitev v striparni Oblaček v Celju. Potem imam pa tudi, no, september je sploh poln teh predstavitev. Tja grem tudi v Črno goro, v Herceg-Novi na festival stripa, kjer bom tudi imel predstavitev, to je začetek septembra. konec septembra pa grem na salon stripa v Beograd in tudi tam bom imel predstavitev Čudaku.
Se pravi, boš imel predvsem malo časa za kakšne nove stripe, ali se vendarle kaj odvija?
Ne, sej trenutno tudi delam en strip zdaj ravno o bosanskih beguncih v Sloveniji med to bosansko vojno, ki je bila. Samo ja, mi pa res, je pa res, da mi malo bolj počas gre, pa zdaj je še poletje, pa vroče je in jaz živim tukaj v mansardi, kjer je vroče, ki hudič, tako da lahko rišem samo dopoldne, popoldne pa bel denarem.
Ja, tudi poletje treba te tegove prevzeti nase. Kako pa to, da se lotivaš ravno stripa o bosanski vojni? Res, da je zdaj že v bistvu bojo počasti obletence se začele, ne? Ampak zakaj? Je mogel nekaj časa miniti ali kaj te v bistvu navdahnul k temu, da boš ta strip začel, da si začel ta strip risati?
Ma v bistvu zato, ker ni še noben o tem pisu, mislim, risu, ne, na risu stripa. Sicer je že Smiljanič je narisil strip o leto 1991, to se pravi strip o vojni v Sloveniji. Lavrič je narisil, da nimo, bosanske basni, kar je zame apsolutno najboljši strip na temo te državljanske vojne v Jugoslaviji. Pa je na to temo išlo zelo velik stripov tudi po svetu. No, o beguncih pa mislim, da še noben ni narisil stripa in sem rekel, da bom jaz se probu soočiti s to tematiko.
No, bomo dobili še enega za odrasle, ker s to tematiko se recimo ravno Tanja Komadina ukvarjala, ampak bolj na otroškem primeru stripa. Tako da imaš konkurenca, ne?
Ja, sem tudi prebral tole fino kolo in mi je blazno všeč strip. Zelo lušten, simpatičen in pač ja, točno to, o čemer sem tudi jaz hotel pisati. Je pa res, da bo moj strip bolj za odrasle, bo pa v bistvu ravno tako pogled skozi oči ene najstnice, to se pravi 15-letne bosanske begunke v Sloveniji.
Se pravi, ponovno najstniki, tudi v Čudakih je večinoma nastopajo mladi protagonisti. Odkje ta ljubezen, ta čar oziroma ustvarjanje najstniških protagonistov?
Pa, kva pa vem, kaže, da mi te teme najstniške najbolj ležijo. Recimo sem delal tudi za Ministrstvo za zdravstvo, sem risal strip o drogah, temna stran Maurice in tam pač tudi nastopajo najstniki. No, še prej sem pa denimo risal Bučmanove, to je bil pa pasični strip za dnevnik, v bistvu bolj otroški. No, v glavnem, meni ležijo pač najbolj take otroške pa najstniške teme, kadar se ne ukvarjam ravno s politiko, s cerkvijo in z ostalimi anomalijami.
Z ostalimi anomalijami. Super, Iztok, najlepša hvala za ta intervju in pa seveda vso srečo s predstavitvami tudi v septembru.
Hvala tebi. Živo.
Lepo pozdravljeni, še vedno poslušate oddajo Stripofilija. In kot obljubljeno, vam bomo končno postregli tudi z intervjujem s Stevom McCloudom, svetovno znanim stripovskim teoretikom, ki je skozi strip sam strip tudi razlagal. Recimo v albumih, kot so Kako razumeti strip, Kako narisati strip, Reinventing comics in podobno. Celo Google Chrome comics, ki je dostopen na spletu, je narisal. In napisal seveda. No, njegov izum, 24-hour comic, je postalo pa tudi pravopravcato mednarodno gibanje, sploh potem, ko so leta 2004 dejansko uveljavili dan 24-urnega stripa. Kaj se dogaja, verjetno ni treba podrobne razlagati. Gre namreč za 24-urno stripovsko džemanje in potem poskušajo iz tega seveda narediti čisto pravi strip, več folka, ki je, več stripa se lahko nariše in verjetno je sicer manj rdeče niti v zgodbi, ampak čisto odvisno, kakor kje. No, Scott McCloud je seveda risal tudi fikcijske stripe, ampak niso bili tako odzivni oziroma ni bilo takega odziva na te same stripe. Zaradi tega smo se tudi z njim pogovarjali bolj o teh teoretskih zadevah. Prisluhnimo torej pogovoru med Scottom McCloudom in Izarjem Lunačkom iz enega letošnjih zimskih stripolisov v kinu Šiška. Torej še vedno poslušate Radio Študent in prihaja Scott McCloud.
I wanted to ask you, what time is it over there now?
Wait, hold on. Now, say again.
What time is it over there now?
Right now it's almost noon. It's about 5 minutes to noon.
Okay, cool. So what are you working on?
I'm working on my new graphic novel.
Oh, cool. What is it going to be about?
It's sort of a romance, sort of about art and death and everything. It takes place in New York. It's cool. Very operatic.
Oh, cool. But this is the first graphic novel you're going to be doing, like, since Lincoln, right?
I'm amazed you even remember that. yeah, it's about 480 pages, so it's a little bit more ambitious than that one.
Wow. How far along are you now?
I'm working on page 361.
Wow. How long have you been working on it?
About 4 years.
Oh, cool.
In two of those years, the first 2 years I spent on layouts. I was working on the layouts.
Uh-huh.
And I did a lot of revisions, a lot of changes, but uh-huh. It was worth it.
So when you start actually drawing, you usually have like all of the layouts, everything set out in advance, or do you change stuff while you work as well?
I do change things a little. In fact, I'm sort of doing a fifth revision now as I draw the pages. Sometimes I'll make little changes to the layout, to the script. But the way I do it, my layouts are, they're very, very, we'd say anal here in the States. That is, I try to make them as much like the book as possible. Uh-huh. So before I draw any of the finished art, I have a sense of what what each and every composition is going to be like.
Okay, and you don't get bored, like just fulfilling the stuff you drew like several years ago? Because I remember having feeling. I remember having this feeling of like when I was doing like my first really long graphic novel, that I was doing, I would do like the whole layouts, and I would feel like for the whole year, I was just like fulfilling the task I set for myself 1 year ago, you know?
Hmm. Well, you know, the way I've worked has always been, it means that when I'm drawing, sometimes it can be stiff if I'm not careful, but mm-hmm. this time the layouts were a little bit rougher, a little bit more loose, and because of that, I was able to make the finished art, I think, a little bit more loose, too. And for some reason, it doesn't bug me as much this time as it used to. Uh-huh. I'm working all digital, that is, it's all done on, I'm drawing everything on this Cintiq tablet where you know, a monitor where you draw directly on the screen.
Uh-huh, okay.
But it's very loose. It's very hand-drawn, and it looks hand-drawn, and I came up with kind of rough brushes, so it would be a little bit messy.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I heard you have, I remember reading in the interview, you haven't picked up, like, an actual brush for years.
Yeah, it's true. I really haven't. You know, I used to have my Winsor & Newton Series 7 Finest Sable brush, and you know, I'd be very careful. Will Eisner taught me how to wrap a little tape around the brush so that the bristles wouldn't get messy, but I haven't done it in many, many years.
But it looks very nice. Like, understanding comics, you still draw by hand.
Yeah, Understanding Comics was drawn on traditional Bristol board, but I used a felt brush for that one. So that was it's like a marker, but you know, it has a flexible tip. And some technical pens for other things.
Cool.
And then I had a friend, my friend Bob Lapham, did the lettering.
Okay, you didn't do the lettering yourself. Okay. I wanted to ask you, like, when you first started doing Understanding Comics, I remember, like, in the introduction, you have this conversation with Matt Fiesel, who says, like, aren't you a little bit young to be doing this?
Yeah.
Did you have this reaction? But you were, like, a bit under 30 when you were doing it, right?
Yeah, I was 33 when it was published, I guess. So I was working on it when I was about 31 years old. I'm 52 now, so it was a long time ago. It's actually, just last month was the 20th anniversary of the publication of Understanding Comics here in the States.
Wow, 20 years last week.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
And it was a huge success, right, Understanding Comics?
Well, you know, what's funny is when we made the book, my wife and I, we thought, you know, maybe it'll sell 60,000 copies, maybe it'll sell 6,000 copies. And then the orders came in, and it was for 6,000 copies. And we were like, oh, okay, well, it was worth a try. And then the reorders started coming in, and they've been coming in ever since, so that was nice.
That's great.
But, you know, and then it's, I think, in about 16, 17 languages now.
Wow, really cool. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the debate that was going on when Understanding Comics came out. You know, like, there was this huge controversy about, particularly with R.C. Harvey, whether comics was just sequential art or whether it was connected to the interplay of words and pictures and so on. And I think your answer was basically always that it doesn't have to have words because you always have mute comics.
Yeah, I still feel that way, and R.C. Harvey still feels that way, actually, too. I saw him in Colorado last year, about a year ago. But we always have fun, you know, debating it. But I think that for me, if my definition means that we lose a few single-panel cartoons and those people become cartoonists, I think that's better than if... with the words and pictures definition, we have to lose somebody like Jim Woodring, you know, who I think is a brilliant cartoonist. And for me, what he does is very much comics. Whereas, you know, a single panel comic like, even I call it a comic, even though I'm saying it's not a comic, but something like, you know, The Family Circus or Far Side. These are great cartoons, but I think that the people who make them, they think of themselves mostly as cartoonists anyway, not so much comics artists. You know?
No,
I don't worry about it too much. You know, I did a chapter on it 20 years ago and I moved on.
Yeah. No, and you talk a lot about how important it is to use the right interplay of words and pictures anyway. So, like, this is, you acknowledge that this is a huge part of the deal.
Well, it's very exciting, how you combine words and pictures. But you know what the big thing was with the whole definition? Is that for me, it wasn't that I wanted to draw this line saying, here's what comics are and what comics aren't. For me, what was exciting was this idea that I could draw this line saying, here's what comics have been, and much, much bigger, you know, this is what comics can be, because when you look at comics as sequential art, you see that there's a much bigger map that you can draw, and many, many more things that can begin to come in that should belong to that family.
Exactly. Yeah, I had the same feeling that what you were trying to do is actually to expand the definition of comics so it wouldn't be defined just by what comic history made of it, right?
Yeah, it was trying to get it out of that box that the past had put it in.
But what would you say, like, to the stuff that people said that that, like, the problem was that in this way, the stuff that would also come under the definition of comics would be like Greek vases and Roman friezes and so on, And they would claim that like comic is a particularly historical art that started at the beginning of the 20th century that is linked to the mass production of newspapers and so on, and that you can't formalize it beyond that.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, what they were concerned about was that I was tearing comics apart from their historical heritage. Mm-hmm. I was saying that, you know, that taking the child and tearing it from the mother, from the family. Mm-hmm. But words have more than one meaning. And yes, you could say comics, comic books, cartoons, although these things have a connection to history, they all have a continuity that goes back. And I'm saying you can still use the word to mean those things. You could still use the word comics just to mean the things that were printed in four colors and have staples, or the things that came in newspapers. That's fine. But I'm saying that there's this other thing, there's this art form. And the art form has been found at various times throughout history, and that it's worthwhile to look at the art form too and see what we can learn from those ancient forms. You know, sometimes people think that it's a little more expensive than it is. For instance, I've heard many, many people think that, or say that I think that Egyptian hieroglyphics are comics. I don't actually say that. In fact, if you go back to understanding comics, I say that they're not, that they're just representing phonetic sounds, even though they may be pictures. But I do think certain Egyptian wall paintings, things like the Bayeux Tapestry, pre-Columbian picture manuscripts, I think those are comics. I think if you look very closely and you read them panel for panel, you realize that the only things that might disqualify them are style or the order you read them in. Those things shouldn't disqualify them.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good point. It's like the point that, Jared Diamond makes in his Guns, Germs, and Steel about writing, you know, that writing was actually invented a couple of times before, but it never evolved, like, into actual writing in the way it's used today, because it was too isolated, and it didn't catch on, you know. I think he talks, like, about they found this disc in the middle of Greece, like, way before Greece ever adopted writing, that actually had the writing symbols on it, but it never caught on. So I think it's maybe kind of the same thing with comic. Like the form was found before, but it never developed because it lacked the technology. Probably like the new mass newspaper printing technology provided that.
But what's interesting is that those isolated inventions of writing that didn't thrive, we still see them as part of the same art form. Exactly. We're saying this didn't lead to a long family of writing, but it was still writing, it was still the written language.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm saying about those isolated inventions of comics.
Exactly, really good. And, one question that I wanted to ask you, like you wrote a whole book, Reinventing Comics, about the future of comics in digital form. And you later also wrote these columns, I Can't Stop Thinking, which are probably an even better way of examining the issue, because you actually examine it through the
although they get old fast, of course, and most of those were done over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And of course, time has really caught up with them, and some of them I think are less relevant than others. But yeah, it was easier to show that stuff on the web than it was in print.
Yeah, because I think your strength in all of your books are that, like, at the same time as you're explaining something, you're also showing it. Like you even did it in making comics. So if you want to talk about digital art, it's really cool that you did it.
Yeah, it was the big problem with reinventing comics was that it was harder to show what I was talking about once I got to that second half of the book.
Cool. So what do you think about digital comics now? Now it's like 10 years past, and to me it seems that like some comics are using the advantages of the internet. They're using like slightly different formats, but they didn't really go into the infinite canvas so much. They just kind of got shorter. They're not doing so much traditional pages anymore. It's more like gag cartoons of about four panels. Yeah. Some of them are doing animations, like Cyanide and Cyanide and Happiness, yeah. They're doing like animations in some part of it. They're doing sound effects. There's lots of hyperlinks. But there's not this like huge taking advantage of the infinite canvas, of the hyperlinks, of like alternative ways of making comics that you imagined, like the ones where you just like click on a link and you can go into different directions, lots of interactivity. This hasn't really caught on, I feel.
Yeah, no, it hasn't. I think what we found was that short strips, the gag strips, they've been a much more successful evolution online because they seem to conform best to how people surf. And the long stuff, the online equivalent of graphic novels and comics, they've had a harder time. And I think that there are a lot of reasons for that. I do think that, ultimately, whatever mode of reading you choose, it has to be something that allows the reader to forget that they're reading. If you want to create a long, long story, if you want to do Persepolis or Mouse or Jimmy Corrigan online, then by the time you're reading, you know, the 10th, the 11th panel, you really shouldn't be thinking about the way it's presented anymore. And a lot of the ways they mix sound and motion, they constantly remind you of the form of what you're reading, and I don't think that works as well. So that's one of the problems. I also think another problem is that people are still clinging to shapes and presentations that have a lot to do with the shape of print, like that. Is the shape of print, you know? This is the natural shape that our eyes conform to, and yet many, many pages are print shape because they hope to print them later or just because they don't know any better. I do think that we will find a comfortable balance, screen-fitting pages and scrollers. There are actually a lot more people just recently, just the last couple of years, playing with that idea of just a continuous scroll. It's the standard way of doing it in Korea now. You have individual artists who've done some very nice things, like Daniel Liske in Germany, or Pat Grant in Melbourne, or Emily Carroll in Vancouver.
Where you kept just like one long page and just scroll down it.
Yeah, well, I mean, usually they're vertical scrollers these days. People seem to be finding that a natural way to go. And as I say, they're very, very common in Korea. That seems to be the standard way to do it there. So different cultures are embracing it at different speeds to different degrees. But, you know, eventually people sort it out. It takes time.
Yeah, a colleague of ours, Sonny Slovenia, did like a really interesting comic inspired by your meditation on internet comics, which was like a huge canvas where you would zoom in into the next scene. So like the biggest scene was like the first panel was the biggest, and then in the background you could already see the second scene, but the final scene was so small. Yeah,
that's like, this is what we call the x-axis in design. This is the y-axis, and that's the z-axis. That's like doing depth, and I think that's a really interesting way to organize it. All you're doing is you're taking the basic idea of comics, 1, 2, 3, and you're just turning it.
And
that's
exactly
a really cool, a very cool approach.
And it's really one thing that you can only do in digital stuff,
Exactly. Actually, you can do it in space. I mean, you could create a gallery exhibit where each panel was one after another after another. Although if it's embedded, if you're zooming in and zooming in, then you know, pretty soon panel one's bigger than the known universe.
Yeah,
it's a little hard to do.
It's a really nice effect. I also wanted to ask you, about making comics, like your latest book. That which year did this come out, Making Comics?
It came out in the States in 2006.
Okay, because it's been translated, I think, in Slovenian in 2010. We have two of your books translated, and we're selling both of them here. And I thought it was really, really nice. I remember when I was a kid, I used to read lots of this stuff about how to make comics and so on. And this is like one of the best ones at all, because you put like a lot of stress on being clear, on telling your story clearly. You focus a lot on beginner mistakes, like drawing faces too similar, trying to get away with really fancy stuff and obscuring the story and so on.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad you liked it. That was a fun book to draw, and I felt like I was returning to some of the things that worked well with understanding comics when I did Making. Also, I had the right tools. I was finally drawing on a Cintiq, which seemed to be a little less stiff than reinventing comics. Also, I saw a need, you know, and I felt that there was a generation of artists, a lot of them girls, a lot of them having grown up reading manga, that I was hoping to speak to. And so far, the evidence is that it's working that way. I'm hearing from a lot of young artists who found that making comics was useful. So that's been very gratifying.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I also thought that you like evolved a lot in your style. I think it's like drawn way better than understanding comics was as well. Not that understanding comics was drawn poorly, but this one is drawn really well. Like the stuff you do with the faces and the expressions, that's like really, really good. Yeah.
Well, now of course I get to apply that in the graphic novel, and people will be looking very closely at the graphic novel. If I don't do it right, they're going to give me hell.
Yeah. You know? It's your.
Yeah, I really have to get it right. Otherwise, oh, it'll be so embarrassing after that.
Well, it's really interesting that you're doing a graphic novel now, because I figured, like, okay, I read Zot, and I also read Zot online, but I found that, like, all of those comics were... You didn't seem as passionate inside them as you do inside the theory books, you know? Like, even Zot online, it's a really interesting experiment in showing all the stuff that you can do in digital comics, but lots of it feels like you're still trying to demonstrate something out of theory in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. So I'm really interested to see. Yeah.
Now that's true, and I think that one of the challenges of doing the graphic novel now is, can I put the theory aside? Can I create something that feels like the story was the most exciting thing for me,
and
I was less interested in just demonstrating things? And that's what I'm trying to do now. And I think, I hope, that I've managed to move in that direction, that the story is the most important thing for me now. You know, this may surprise you, but one of the most interesting things I read recently was a comic for children by Raina Telgemeier. It's called Drama, and it's just read mostly by like 13, 14-year-old girls here in the States. But I like to see comics changing for kids. And one of the things that I'm seeing now is more and more this idea of emotion as action. This is something we didn't do a lot here in the States for a long time because they were all, you know, superhero stories and science fiction. But this idea that every time a character's emotion changes, it deserves its own panel, that's revolutionary, and it's actually going to change the way young people read comics. So even though the comics, they look very simple, they may look very conventional, I actually think that's one of the more interesting things that's happening right now. And then, of course, there are interesting things going on online. Some of the craziest art comics, the collaborative comics that are going on online are nice. Michael DeForge, for example, some of the more strange abstract stuff going on. It's sometimes hard to say exactly. Do you know one of my favorite recent graphic novels was Market Day by James Sturm? I really like that book, and I've read it a few times, and it really settled in me. It's hard to say. A lot of different things, but it's hard to think of them all at once because they're all just so different.
First question, what was the first comic that really convinced you that this was something you wanted to spend your entire life on? Second question, did you ever have doubts about, you know, becoming a comic artist? And third question, did you ever quit? And if you did, how did you come back?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'll need the question repeated, please.
What was the first comic that really convinced you that this is what you want to do with your life? And
did you ever have doubts about becoming a comic artist?
To answer the second question first, no. Actually, I was a very, very confident kid. And once I wanted something, I never turned back, never questioned it. I don't know why. I was just seemed to have that kind of personality where I was just very confident and very certain that I'd do it. Something about where I grew up, or I don't know what it was exactly. The first comic, you know, I remember sitting in a friend's house when I was about 13 years old, and he had some Jim Steranko comics. He was an artist who worked on superhero comics back in the 60s and 70s, and he was one of the more adventurous artists. And I remember one comic, he used some images that were similar to Salvador Dali's paintings, like The Persistence of Memory. And as a kid, I really liked Salvador Dali, and I remember, even though I was only 13 years old, I remember looking at those comics and thinking, maybe comic books had, there was some art there. Maybe there could be art. Maybe something unusual could be done with them. And that's where I started from as a kid. And it was only when my friend Kurt lent me, big stacks of comics to read. There were superhero comics because, you know, it was the United States and I was 14 years old. But when he lent me a big stack of those comics and I read them, and then I became interested in comics as a reader, and I realized that the real art of comics was being a storyteller. And so I tried to become a storyteller, but that part of me that was interested in the art form, it was still in there. And because of that, it was always watching too. And then in 1993, that's when Understanding Comics came out, where the whole time that I was trying to just tell the story, there was also a part of me that was also trying to figure out how stories worked and how the medium worked, and that led to Understanding Comics. Book where a bunch of Marvel superheroes fought each other and destroyed our high school. It was fun.
Yeah, fulfillment fantasy, yeah. Desire fulfillment fantasy.
Yeah. Hey, oh, yeah.
Okay. David is asking what you think about animation and sound being introduced into comics.
Wait, actually, could you repeat that?
David, what do you think about animation and sound being introduced into comics, into digital comics?
You know, I think that I think it actually can work, but it seems to work best when it's looped. So, for instance, if you have here, let's panel one, right? Panel two. Wait, am I going left to right or right to left? I don't know. Whatever. Okay, panel
no,
one.
You're okay. You're
panel
okay.
Two. Panel three. All right? If panel two has a little animation in it, but it just keeps doing the same thing over and over, we still have that sense that panel one came before panel two, and panel two comes before panel three, and it feels like comics. And not only that, but I think that anyone reading it, even if they've barely even experienced comics, for them it's very easy to understand what it all means. So, you know, maybe you have somebody walking to a restaurant, and then panel two, they're eating a bowl of spaghetti, right? But the fork is just going like that, up and down and up and down and up and down. And now you see them walking away from the restaurant, and they're really fat. Everyone understands that. They understand it, and they get used to it very quickly. And I've seen comics like this. There's this one comic from Montreal where somebody's coming home drunk after a party, and it works perfectly, and every panel is a looped animation. Because what's happening is you're saying that the panel that's animated, it's a steady state. That is, it represents something that ultimately doesn't change. Feels like comics. But I think that when you try to do something like the Watchmen motion comic, I don't know if anyone has seen that, where all the words, somebody's reading all the word balloons and you sit back and it's like an animation. I think that's just comics trying to become something else. It's like a way of saying that, well, the movies are more entertaining than comics. You know, it should all be like movies. And I just think that's very, very sad, and it doesn't work terribly well. But mostly, what the most important thing is, no matter what you introduce into digital comics, there has to be that sense that once you start reading, the mode of presentation doesn't change. It doesn't become something else while you're reading, because every time the medium changes, you become aware of the medium, and when that happens, you're pulled out of the story. You're no longer in the spell of the story, and as a reader, it's just not as satisfying. And that's why I think the things that do that, they haven't caught on.
Can you recall any example where sound was used well?
Well, sound can be it's actually the same thing. It's the idea of ambient sound. So you know, if you have like a loop of music or sounds that are just sort of atmospheric, and that they change as you change, you know, as you move along, I think that can work. Patrick Farley has done some of that stuff. I think the sound is well used in a comic called Nawls, which is spelled Nawlz. It's very, very weird. But the sound, I think, is very effective.
But it's mostly atmospheric sound. It's not like where you push a button.
Yeah, it's atmospheric or looped. Mm-hmm. I think that can work okay.
Lepo pozdravljeni nazaj, Radio Študent, poslušate in oddajo Stripofilija. Tudi poleti se ima marsikaj zgoditi na stripovskem področju, tako da gremo pogledat, kaj se bo kaj dogajalo na teh dogodkih oziroma kdaj in kje bojo. Recimo Matjaž Bartoncelj skupaj z ostalimi nekaj diplomanti Akademije AVA ima v žigalici še vedno odprto razstavo, ki se je odprla pred pretekli petek, kjer pa predstavlja tudi svoj diplomski strip, ki je že izšel in ga bomo podrobneje predstavili v Stripofiliji na Radio Študent v avgustu. Sredina avgusta bo precej pestra. Torej, če boste v Piranu 14. avgusta ob 8. zvečer, se le ustavite v pop-up domu, ki se bo sicer otvoril že 1. avgusta z nastopom Loudspeaker Alliance, ampak 14. pa bo tam tudi predstavitev mesečne rubrike Stripolis, ki jo sicer vsak mesec med letom lahko vidimo v kinu Šiška. No, idejni oče Stripolisa, Izar Lunaček, bo torej predstavil nekaj poglavij iz stoletne zgodovine stripa, pokazal bo nekaj svojih dosedanjih najuspešnejših projektov in stripov v delu, pa še kaj boste seveda lahko tudi sami poprašali o Stripolisu. Do 15. avgusta pa vas še enkrat opozarjam, da se lahko še vedno prijavite na stripovski natečaj pod okriljem Salona Stripa Beograd, in sicer z eno do maksimalno štirimi tablami. Ena tabla je torej ena stran. Na naslov SKC, Srečna galerija, Mednarodni salon stripa, Kralja Milana 48, 11.000 Beograd, Srbija. Je pa en predpogoj, in sicer stripi morajo biti ali v srbskem ali v angleškem jeziku. Potem pa je tu še 16. avgust, evo, tretji zaporedni. Če boste 14. že v Piranu, kar ostanete dol še do 16. avgusta. V Izoli se bo namreč zgodil sejem stripov in družabnih iger anime. Trajal bo tam med 10. in 23. uro. Igral se bo pa ogromno igr, prodajal se bo stripe, tudi cosplay bo, ki mu bo sledil pohod po mestu, tam ob 5. popoldanski. Večji del programa bo v osnovni šoli Dante Alighieri, no fotografska razstava Cosplay Italy pa bo v parku Pietro Coppo. No, v tem veličastnem vzdušju overture Williama Tella, če ste mogoče prepoznali tole muziko, bomo počas zaključili, tako da to bi bilo za danes vse. Hvala za posluh, želim vam predvsem eno fajn plažo, pa zraven še kak dober strip. Slišimo se avgusta, pa lepo se mejte. Čau.
Čuki, Marko, pa je to v tej izložbi, pa menda ni, da to moram preveriti.
Dobar dan.
Dan, oprosti, a sem prav videl, da imate novo številko?
Ja, ja, tamle, tako je levo.
Oh, kak lepa izdaja. Barvna naslovka, trda veza, a lahko prelistam?
Ja, seveda.
Oh, diši, to von tiskarnem je genialen. Pa kakšna dobra risba.
To je en čist mlad model, ampak veliko beta. Letos je nominiran za Eisnerja, pa scenarij tudi ni slab, veste.
Scenarij? Čakaj, a je to res pisal?
Ja, ja, Alan Moore.
Oh, koliko model go vlada, kako gradi zgodbo, kako nastal polnotna leitmotiv, ko se ponovi na konc. Kako gradi napetost, kako nas pripelja do zapleta, do podzapleta, peripetije, odloga vrhunca, vrhunca in... Oh, strip, strip, strip!
Gospod, tole boste mogli pa kar kupiti.
Stripofilija.
Oddaja za stripovske sladokusce.
Novosti.
Legende.
Napovedi.
Vsak mesec na Radiu Študent.